Hey everyone, welcome back to another episode of the China Startup Pulse. I am Ryan Shukin, and Todd, or my co-host, is on break right now. He's not here, but Vivian Law, our producer, is going to help me bring us in.
Hi everyone.
Hey Vivian, it's good to hear your voice on air.
Yeah, finally.
Yeah, you're always behind there making sure our levels are great and everything, and always super appreciative of it. So today's guest is Stéphane de Mongreau.
Yeah, you got it.
Yes, the name, I said it right.
Yes, Stéphane de Mongreau, mm-hmm. And he co-founded Riviera Events, which is an events management company, along with his co-founder Benoit Thébault, and their events company focuses on the luxury hospitality industry. Along with that, they also co-founded the Hotelier Awards, which is like the Oscars for hotel people.
And they have a really interesting origin story.
Yeah, from doing pool parties on the rooftops of hotels in Shanghai, then changing to nightlife, mm-hmm. such as on Bar Rouge, but then pivoting completely towards hotels.
Yeah, and when they pivoted, it's really interesting because they had a working revenue model. And they went into an unknown one because they saw the future and the vision of what they wanted to be. They knew that it wasn't doing what they had. So they had a few rough years after that. And he talks about the struggle and what it meant to keep on motivating and him and his team and moving forward despite the change and the pivot.
Yeah, and within that, he tells us how long it actually took him to build up this trust with his clients and also the market and consumers within tier one and tier two cities.
Yeah, tier one. I mean, there's a difference between tier one, two, and three cities. But in what he's doing, it's actually very similar. And he talks about this kind of consumer difference between the tier cities. And then he also finishes it up on some really interesting insights onto the opportunity in the luxury and event and hotel industry right now in China. And he has some really good advice about riding the biggest wave.
Yeah, he has a great analogy. So listen in.
Yeah. Thanks, guys. And let's get into it. Hey, everyone. We are here with Stéphane de Mongreau.
Hi, everyone.
Hey, and we're really happy and lucky to have him on the show today. And I'm going to do a quick background, giving you some info about how we got to China and what he's been doing up to then. Then we can get into the real meat. So Stéphane, first, he studied in France, an engineering university in Paris. And he first came to China in 2000, where he studied Chinese at, did you say Jiao Tong University?
Exactly, yeah, Jiao Tong.
Yeah, and then he, in 2003, got a job doing mechanical engineering here, and then speckled around there from 2003 to 2004, 5, 6, 7, was doing events, pool parties. And then eventually in 2007, it was founded as Riviera Events. And then he's been doing that for however you want to count, either 11 or 9 years. And then eventually in 2014, started a really amazing project called the Hotelier Awards.
All correct.
That's right. That's pretty good.
Thank you.
Thanks so much for being here. Let's try to help you explain, or actually help explain to me what the Hotelier Awards are and what Riviera Events is about.
Mm-hmm. All right. So very, very straightforward. There's a lot of event agencies in China. The reason is very, very simple. A lot of brands want to access this amazing market, even though I keep hearing that the Chinese economy is slowing down. There's still an amazing market. The growth is there. And the difference between now and 2, 5, 10 years ago is that, okay, 10 years ago, you could open shop. Mm-hmm. The growth was so amazing that you could get business. Now the difference is that, okay, if you need to do a good job, and if you do a good job, then you'll be fine. It's just tougher than before, but it's still happening. Why all these brands want to come to China? Because obviously the growth is there. It's not easy to grow in Europe. It's not easy to grow in the States.
It's a completely foreign market for a lot of these brands too, right?
It is. And it's obviously opportunities, right? So how do you develop a brand? One of the platform to develop your brand name is to put together events. So as a result of that, you have a lot of event agencies that are trying to capture all these marketing dollars that are being spent in mm-hmm. China to build brand exposure. What is very interesting is, sure, you have a lot of events, but down the years, agencies have specialized in different fields. So some mm-hmm. guys, all they do is German cars. They'll be working for BMW, Porsche, Mercedes, Audi, etc. Mm-hmm. And they're very, very good at it. Some other brands, all they do is working for cosmetic, and they'll be very good at working for L'Oreal and Lancome and all these guys. Some people do fashion industry. They're very good at fashion shows. Our choice back in 2008 was to focus on the travel industry. And we got mm-hmm. very, very, very lucky.
It's travel and luxury, or is it just travel?
Mainly travel, upscale travel.
It's actually upscale travel.
A great question. Yeah, that's where you actually have interesting things happening, more creative, more budgets as well. So it's definitely upscale travel industry.
Yeah.
And it's been amazing because I can tell you 2017, sorry, 2016 is our best year so far.
Oh, yeah? Excellent.
We twice over plan between January 1st and to the halfway through the year. Mm-hmm. And the result of that, the reason actually of that is that the travel industry is very, very healthy in China, both inside China and outbound. Outside of China. So there's a lot of amazing things happening in the travel field, both in and out of the country.
I totally agree. I mean, there's an amazing amount of stats about how China in Southeast Asia and China, Japan, Korea are one of the massive, like, best points of travel. More travel happening between those places than anywhere else in the world in the next few years. I mean, to get a piece of this luxury travel market or just this travel market, high-end travel market, is incredible.
Definitely. You've pointed it right. So our business today is China, China. We have offices in Beijing, Shanghai, Guangzhou, and Chengdu. We're opening Shenzhen in the next few weeks and Macau from the beginning of 2017. So right now we've decided to focus on Greater China because that's where our Guangxi is. That's where the network and the relationships are. Down the road, there's so much potential in the rest of Asia that it's something we'll be looking at.
This is what you are and what you do now. Mm-hmm. And what you do is so great. And it's so almost obvious now because there's so much opportunity. Mm-hmm. What were you when you first started?
Interesting.
When you first got there, when you were first starting your Vieira events, from pool parties to maybe trying to scale it up a little bit, what was that like? And what did you guys think of yourself? Like, what was your self-branding?
Very interesting. So actually, there was something in between. We started with the pool parties and very fast, we actually moved to nightclubs. So we used to be the agency that were doing all the cool parties for Bar Rouge, that back then, Barn 18 in Shanghai used to be the place to be. So there was that phase in between where we worked a lot with alcohol brands. And we were very, 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 very lucky because that was the timing where the two main champagne competitors were trying to develop market shares here. So on one side, you have LVMH that owns MHD, which is their beverage section that has Moët Chandon, Veuve Clicquot, all these guys. Mm-hmm. And then you have Pernod Ricard, the other big French company that's got Mumm Champagne, Perrier Jouët, etc. So back in 2005, 6, 7, 8, champagne and wine as a general was starting in China. And they had massive budgets to just gain market share. It was not about making a profit.
Not at cost. Just lose money.
Exactly.
Gain
invest,
as much
invest,
as
invest, invest.
Oh my
invest,
God.
Invest. And we were very lucky because we were there getting paid to put together pool parties, drinking champagne.
Oh my God.
and that was just a great time. We were very lucky. Great. Good time, good place. You know, we were perfect.
You were the right spot. Timing. I mean, the market was expanding. There was like a turf war going on for alcohol. They needed someone on the ground to set up all these events and you guys were right there.
Exactly. And we had that French touch, obviously, that was helpful working for all these French brands.
That's one of the questions I wanted to kind of ask is that working in high-end brands or building an event, like did your background or experience help you in a way that they gave more trust? Like, how were you able to build trust on the international brand side and on the Chinese side?
It's actually another great question. Congratulations on that one. everything we do is about trust. I could talk about it for half an hour on the marketing side of things.
Yeah, give us like your 10 minute.
Sure. Okay, I'll try to keep it short. An event is not something you can have samples for, and it's not something you can do again the next day if something doesn't work out on the evening. So it has to be right on that one time, and there's no backup. There's no doing it again the next day if something was messed up. So before marketing leaders trust on choosing a specific agency, they need at first to make sure that they can trust the agency they're going to choose. And actually, it's even a bit more interesting than this. Marketing managers tend to choose agencies, keeping in mind the fact that if something goes wrong, they will not get blamed for having chosen that specific agency. So you don't have that many marketing managers out there that would take a risk and choose an agency that just came out of the ground. And that's something that took us a long time to understand. And I can tell you, like, Riviera to become a good, healthy business took us 5, 6, 7 years of working out, delivering quality, but to reach that tipping point where, okay, now we have that trust and it's much easier. So you have to actually really go over that hill. And then on the other side, it's actually much, much, much easier. So building trust is something very, very, very important. And we could talk about how we market the agency and the Atelier Awards is one of
it. Are you a Wolfie or do you have a Chinese co-founder? I mean, building trust usually like, people try to go local or they try to do Wolfie. They have stories about how it's difficult being a foreigner and building trust.
Sure.
And what are you guys?
Answering your question, having a French and a European background was actually a great asset because French are seen quite good at lifestyle, quality of life, all this luxury industry. So that was definitely a great asset. We were very lucky to have that background. We are Wolfie. So the holding company is in Hong Kong, Wolfie in Shanghai, and each of the different offices, Beijing, Shanghai, Guangzhou, etc., they're all legal branches of the Shanghai Wolfie. So it's one thing we've decided from the very, very beginning. Mm-hmm. And it was tough because you don't have much business to pay all these taxes and all these legal fees was a bit of an investment for us. But we decided to go that way because from the very, very beginning, Riviera was not something we were setting up for 1 year or 2 years. It was a long-term plan, a long-term vision to build a successful business. So I really encourage everyone to get things done the right way, because if for some reason someone actually finds out that you do things a little bit of a dodgy way, then again, it's all about the trust, right? So it's that investment was definitely worthwhile. We don't have a Chinese investor or Chinese partner. Mm-hmm. And again, that was a bit of luck. In our field, we're just a service provider. We actually a consulting company, technically speaking. And we were able to be 100% foreign consulting company. In that field, China did not impose companies to have a Chinese partner.
If you're doing a Wolfie back then, that was pretty much the inception of the Wolfie back when you were starting it. And you're doing it without any Chinese consultation or any, I mean, you didn't know what would happen or could happen. I mean, how did you decide to move forward? Like, what did you do personally to like be like, no, today is going to be better. We're going to keep on making things better. Like, did you have something that kept on pushing you?
You need to be crazy. we were 20, I think Benoit was pre 26. I was 28. So it's a classic, you know, you just go at it. You know that if it doesn't work out, okay, no big deal. Move back to wherever you're from and start again. So we were totally okay with that level of risk. There was no worries at all. There's stories that we tell, like some evenings you would have 15 kwai in your pocket and you're like, okay, do I take a cab and eat that one apple that I have left in the fridge, or do I actually walk home and then buy myself a nice bowl of noodles? You can always call back and get money sent to China from your family. That was always an option, but we decided not to do so and really went through the process. And that's the best call in life. So we were okay with that level of risk. Yeah. There was no big deal.
Did you ever fundraise money?
No, not yet actually. Another choice. As of now, we've decided to grow at our own pace and having 100% control. Is it something that in the future we'll look at in a different way? It's definitely possible. We have these two options. I do find sometimes I have obviously quite a lot of friends around me that have been raising money, and sometimes from the outside they give me the impression that they spend 100% of their time, if not 110% of their time, trying to race after the next round of investment. Yeah. And I'm like, man, like, how do you actually have time to run a proper business?
Yeah, when you're raising,
all we've done is actually running a business until now. I guess the plus is that now, if at one point there's some sort of an exit, well, all the shares are ours. So it's interesting. Two different visions. Also, I think we were very, very young. Also, being the first business, so like, okay, we have time. No big deal. Like, we'll take it a month after.
You didn't have many competitors when you first started, or did you?
No, we actually, you're right. In our small league, we did not have that much competitors. And obviously, the bigger agencies were there, but they were doing different stuff. That's the beauty of China. The market is so big that people can actually find a space. We were actually really able to find our own niche and develop in there. So we had that time. Today, I think would be a lot more difficult because Shanghai has become very expensive. So would we look at another city? But at the same time, being successful in Shanghai is also kind of a statement versus starting in other second tier.
I mean, Shanghai is like, these are tier one cities. They're their own beast.
Exactly.
Completely different than tier two, tier three for all the listeners. I mean, those are basically the systems in which China grades the size of the cities and kind of the industry in them. And tier one cities are these just massive super cities that you would see in any other country. But in China, they're just normal cities.
Exactly. Yeah. Huge. A tier three city would be the size of LA probably.
Yeah. still huge. Yeah. So I have a question about your kind of market. Would you consider yourself too market facing? Are you trying to supply an experience that, let's say, the brand expects, but then you're also trying to supply an experience that the consumer or the person who's attending the event can culturally, you know, relate to and experience? Is it a little bit too facing in that way?
A little bit, yes, sure. Because the people paying the bill at the end of the day, they are the brand people and, mm-hmm. and these are the clients. But then you have all these event guests, and our job is to support the clients and the brands in putting together meaningful experiences that would actually please their guests and create memories, right? So one big part of our job is actually really to consult, to advise our clients on mm-hmm. what do we think will be the most impactful in terms of creating meaningful guest experiences. Mm-hmm. So we do a lot of grand openings for these hotels. Yeah. We do a lot of activation events for their bars and their lounges, a lot of roadshows when they want to promote that one specific property to other cities around mm-hmm. the country, that kind of stuff.
You know, that's a good moment to take a break and thank our sponsors. But when we get back, I definitely want to talk to you kind of about that topic, because you've seen a lot of China and you've seen a lot of the different types of consumers in China. So I want to get more about consumers, the differences between them, what their preferences are, and then also, again, how you build trust and build your company, what kind of pivots you had. So let's get all into that when we get back from the break.
Sounds good. Thank you.
Hey, everyone. We want to give a shout out to our sponsors. China Accelerator is the number one accelerator in the East. They are a mentorship-driven program that takes your ideas from all over the world and helps you make them successful in China. At the same time, we take great ideas from inside China and help them grow all over the world. If you want to find out more, please visit www.chinaaccelerator.com, and batch 10 applications are going to be open soon, so it's a really good opportunity to get in there.
We also want to thank our other sponsor, PeopleSquared. PeopleSquared is the largest and best co-working space across China. They've got 8 or 9 spaces in Shanghai. They've got spaces up in Beijing. They've got spaces down in Shenzhen. They really are the best community of people to be dealing with here. So if you have a startup and you're coming to China, PeopleSquared is your number one choice.
And we'd also like to thank our syndication partner, Technode. They are the number one source for news and information about the startup ecosystem, what's going on inside of China. They also work with TechCrunch and helped publish and syndicate that. So we're really happy to have them on as a syndication partner. You can find out more at technode.com. Hey, everyone. Welcome back. We're here with Stéphane de Mongros.
Mm-hmm.
We're talking about how in order to do these events, you need to really understand the market and the type of consumers and what they really want. And so across these cities and all of your experience, like, what do these people really, really want? How are you delivering something that they feel, you know, is special?
There's a few interesting things. Even if you put together an event in these second tier cities we were discussing before, mm-hmm. your Chengdu, your Guangzhou, your Chongqing, your Wuhan, what is crazy is these consumers, I've seen it all already. They're very, very connected. The time where BMW were introducing to China cars that were 2 years old back mm-hmm. in the West is over. Right now,
really?
The newest products are featured first in China. So there's no trying to recycle old stuff into the market here. Mm-hmm. Shanghai, Beijing, Shenzhen, like these first tier cities, it's even more intense. The consumers are very aware of what's happening. So don't even think of like trying to recycle stuff.
Pulling one over their eyes real quick. Like, oh, it's brand new. No, it's old.
Exactly. So they know about it. So it has to be new. It has to be cool. It has to be creative. It has to be innovative. One thing which is very, very, very important that makes me laugh, but it's really a best mm-hmm. practice in what we do, is every single RMB that we do spend for our clients, it has to be in something visual. Because people here in China, there's one thing which is more important than the life they live. It's the story that they tell of the life they live.
Yeah.
So every single event is about creating these photo opportunities mm-hmm. where your guests will be able to take pictures of the stuff or of themselves in that special environment and post that on the social networks.
Yeah.
So it's very, very visual. So we tell our clients all the time, okay, sure, we need a back, we need a bit of back of the house, and you may need to have a generator producing the electricity behind the backdrops, but we'll try to really optimize and invest all the budget in things that people can see, can touch, and can photograph. That's the most important. So new stuff all the time, and be visual, 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 visual. And the funny thing is that the gap between the first, second, third tier is not that big, actually. Again,
really?
like people that do have that lifestyle and that have been traveling and that have been purchasing the best products from the best brands, they're pretty much aware of what's happening. So Shanghai may have a little bit of an advantage, but it's very, very, very short.
So it's not necessarily advantageous to over optimize for these other tier cities for what you do.
No, actually, yeah, there's no like developing something for Shanghai and then 6 months later you roll it out to the other cities.
Yeah,
it's really one big market level.
It feels like it's becoming one big market over time. Like maybe a few years ago there was a larger difference between these tier cities, but sure. It feels like now more than ever You're just marketing to consumers.
Exactly. And I think technology, social networks, obviously the internet, this is what actually make China one big market on the same level everywhere. Very interesting.
Mm-hmm. So let's talk about the Hotelier Awards a little bit and about how that was a trust play.
Sure. So yeah, how do you build trust? And one interesting fact about people is that people do like to win awards.
I think that's anyone,
right?
Even little kids, for anything you do.
Hey, you have that trophy and you bring it back home and that's a big deal. So we're actually playing on that. We're playing on the fact that people like to have awards. The other thing which is very, very interesting is the travel industry is developing so fast, people tend to change jobs every 18 or 24 months. In that industry. So you work for a hotel in Shanghai and then 2 years later they would take you to another hotel and then you would actually quit that company and move to another hotel brand in another city, etc. So it's very, very dynamic. A lot of opportunities, but at the same time, it's quite competitive. So people do spend actually a lot of time nurturing their LinkedIn profile and pretty much their resumes. And for them to add a line with that award as the best food and beverage hotelier of the year, the best general manager of the year, etc., that is actually a big deal. So the challenge for us was to build a platform where, again, we would have that trust in the platform, make it legit. So we've done so by actually choosing a panel of judges that are very, very famous in the industry, that are the one actually processing all the applications and deciding on who's moving forward to the second round of the phone interviews. And after the second round, we have the announcement of the winners. So having a great panel of judges was important. Just understanding the way the industry is structured to actually try to finance the platform through a different way, because you don't want to charge the hotels, because if the hotels are being charged, you're going to tell you, okay, well...
Was this a pivot for you guys or just like an offshoot?
It's an offshoot. It's actually reinforcing Riviera, because now when we actually go and visit clients, okay, before we were the Riviera event people trying to work with you on an event. Now, okay, we're still trying to work with you on events, but we also have this Hotelier Awards on the side. And well, we have nothing to do with the judging process, right? We kept it very, very separate. But that said, it doesn't hurt to be good buddies, to have some interesting insights on what's happening. So it's kind of also an insurance policy on Riviera Events. It's a world's an insurance policy of the other business.
And it's building trust between the whole community, right?
Definitely. And actually, what is even more interesting than that is it really feels good to give back, because we've been developing the business thanks to the travel industry and all these great people that are working very hard for these hotels. Now we're able to actually give exposure back to these guys, because you talk a lot about your general managers, you talk about your famous chef around the world, but we don't talk much about the guys that work in the background. So the engineers, the HR, the finance, like all these hoteliers that are specialists in their field. So it's actually, we feel, number one, really, really good to give back to these guys. number two, actually, that's really my new driver, my new passion for the platform, is to try to inspire the younger generation to join the hotel industry and the travel industry in Asia. Because, you know, when you know, people tend to have one kid here in Asia. And when you have one kid, you want them to be a lawyer, a banker, an astronaut. And you don't always think of the hotel industry, the service industry, right? What is very, very interesting because of the growth of the industry is that, yeah, sure, you may actually start your career with cleaning the dish for a year or two. Yeah. But if you work hard and if you're a little bit lucky, if you're a little bit smart as well, you can actually grow very, 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 very fast to corporate positions, to GM jobs by the time you hit 40 or 45 years old, just because there's so many hotel openings. There's such a growth in the industry.
Okay, I want to ask a question about that. So this is, you brought in an idea into China and multiple ideas that seemed like there was a void. Would you consider yourself either a disruptor into the China market, like disrupting what was the status quo, or were you someone, were you bringing ideas from the West into China?
A little bit of both. I do think actually we're there to support making the industry more complete. I think the a lot of things have been there before, and we're there to complement the existing with additional stuff. So I don't consider ourselves disruptors per se. It's more actually about bringing things that were missing here. So the void was there, and we took it and we did it well.
Would you say that the industry, because it seemed like you, I mean, I remember back in 2005, the industry was really ripe for events. Anyone could do anything. There was a lot of people who just wanted to be a part of something.
True.
Right now, do you feel like you could give, like, would you give the same advice to someone who is joining right now? Or would you say something different?
I think there's always something new to bring. And what's amazing here is the energy is so big that you just get carried away just because there's just so much happening and it's changing all the time. So yes, we did have a fantastic timing. But again, if you come now, if you have a lot of energy and you don't give up easily, there's plenty of stuff to do. It's an amazing market. It's interesting because for the Hotelier Awards, I've just been traveling to Southeast Asia to actually develop the awards in these other countries. So spend some time in Singapore, spend some time in Indonesia, Thailand, etc. And the result of all these trips is that, okay, sure, China is not perfect, but as an entrepreneur, I feel that our job is to place our surfboard on the biggest wave. Singapore, amazing city. Great little wave, but it's a little wave. Indonesia, love the place. Jakarta, fantastic city, best partying of my life. There's no wave. This is really just very, very, it's the very, very beginning. And then all these other countries like Vietnam, Thailand, there's a wave, but it is small. I feel like there's nothing but China because the wave is there and it's massive. So it's all about, okay, trying to find the right angle to surf that wave, but it's there, it's the right place to be.
That's a great analogy. So I want to get into a little bit of real talk. We joked before you came in a little bit about the struggle for entrepreneurs.
Sure.
And, you know, I said, everybody here's got the struggle. And you laugh and, you know, oh, what struggle? What are you talking about?
Sure.
And Ben Horowitz writes a lot about what he considers a struggle. All the really ugly moments that you need to make a decision that you don't want to make, but you make it anyways.
Sure. I think the tough part is actually you can't really read about what's the next struggle going to be, and you can't really prepare yourself because it's always unexpected. Because if it was expected, you would have tried to prepare yourself for it. For us, I think the main one was we had no idea about how long it would take for us to build that trust. And one of the very strategic pivots actually was when we decided to actually stop nightlife, because until we were doing nightlife, people would be like, okay, these guys are fun, they do cool stuff, but they work for nightclubs. Yeah. And at some point we had to be, okay, let's stop it, even though right now that's what's financing the agency. We have to stop it because if we want to grow, we have to get out of that segment. So there was actually 2008, 9, 10 were very, 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 very tough because we had to really build our next positioning. And I think if I could sum it up, the struggle is nothing can replace time. You're going to tell me maybe, okay, if you have a ton of money and bring big investors, okay, maybe you can go faster. It's something I haven't experienced yet. And maybe that is the case. I do think, though, that especially in China, nothing is more precious than spending the time on getting it right. I mean, we're here, and it's all about accelerating, mm-hmm. right? So it's all about
getting it right. It's about getting it right. With the right resources.
Exactly. So that's quite quite interesting. So I think that was the biggest struggle, mm-hmm. is we had no idea it would take that amount of time to reach that tipping point where the trust is there, and then now, okay, finally you're in a healthy phase of the business.
Wow. I mean, was everybody on your side for that, or did you have to just lead and just tell everyone that we're walking away from our revenue? We're walking into a new area that we don't have any revenue. Yeah, follow me.
People look at you and they don't really know actually what you're trying to achieve. You just have to bite your lip and go with it, and then it works out. I think one thing which is also super important is at every single step of the development, we did try to develop without making enemies. Mm-hmm. Sometimes you end up in situations where a client may end up not paying 100% of what they're supposed to pay. I do believe that, okay, you try to find solutions, but at the end of the day, if you have a choice between going ugly or just letting it go and think of the long term, go long term. That's what we did. And even though China is a huge country, the industry is actually also quite small. So you have to be very, 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 very smart. So these 11 years of building the brand for the agency, our own brand as well, that's been very strategic as well. So that would be a good advice I would share with you listeners.
Let's get a last question here before we have to wrap things up. We have actually a few companies that are coming in or that have been in the program that are targeting, let's say, the upper class, kind of more luxury consumers and brands and things like that through fashion or through sharing dresses and things like that, rent the runway, mm-hmm. kind of stuff like that. Do you think there's still technology plays that are useful or impactful for kind of like what you're doing and in your space that could still come to China?
Huge, more than ever. Huge. I really think that if you bring value, it's all about really delivering value. But if you bring value, the sky is the limit. Also in terms of raising funds and developing faster. It's a huge market. It's only going to get better. There will be hiccups on the way. But if your startup is delivering value to all these upscale luxury brands, they will invest in you. The reason is the competition between them is so hardcore that they have no choice but to find ways to differentiate from each other. So if you give them that platform to differentiate from their peers, they will go full speed with you. So man, it's better than ever. It's the right time to be here.
Awesome. Hey, thank you so much for being on the show. I really appreciate it.
Cheers, buddy.
Thank you to all of our listeners. Thank you to Vivian, our producer over there, making sure our levels are great. Thank you to David, our sound engineer. And of course, thank you to everybody who subscribes and listens every week. All right. So actually, I'm going to edit this in real quick. How do people contact you? How do people reach out to you? Because we always want to give you an opportunity.
Sure. So people can reach out to us on the website, www.rivieraevents.com. Mm-hmm. RIVIERA events.com. Riviera. Thank you.
All right. Thanks so much, Savan. I really appreciate it.
Cheers. Thank you.